The following broadcast of Compassion Radio is from our vast archive of programming content. It originally aired in August of 2014. On today's Compassion Radio.
During the break, one of the guys leans up and in a very loud voice said, "Miss Scheer, are you a Christian?" And they all turned to see what the answer to that was. And I looked at him and I said, "Well, yes, Edgar, we are."
Intrepid.
When God tells you to go, then everything works out. He provides.
Involved.
It is so exciting to see what God can do. And this is why there is so much hope.
International.
Compassion Radio allows the listener to get involved in projects that are going to change history.
This is Compassion Radio.
Celebrating 70 years of God's provision and intrepid ministry, welcome to Compassion Radio. What would you describe as your trip of a lifetime? I could well imagine that each of us has some select destinations that we'd surely like to visit someday, right? Items on the old bucket list. Well, our own Norman Cher Nelson just returned from what they'd certainly call the trip of a lifetime. Yes, it did involve travel to a faraway land, but their chief reason for going was to spend time in a classroom. It's about time we catch up and get an update from our dynamic duo. So let's get started. Here's Cher.
Well, Norm, we have something fun to talk about today, and it particularly is close to your heart because many years ago on our first trip to China, God sort of planted a seed in your heart about something that you would like to go back to, which was teaching at the university level, when you discovered that it was possible for people to volunteer to teach at the universities in China. And you'd followed it up a couple of times, and the timing just didn't work out. It didn't seem like the Lord opened the door at the right time. But this year, after all of these years of researching and wishing and wanting and praying, you finally got your opportunity. And the amazing thing is that by waiting this long, you got to go into the highest-ranked university in China to teach at the very highest level. And only a few are honored to do so, and you were one of them. Tell us about it, and tell the people what an experience it was for us.
Yeah, you know, honey, as you so well know, I had an opportunity last summer, to go to China and to teach a course at Renmin University, which used to be known as the People's University of China. It's an enormous school and a very high ranking, but it isn't Peking University. It's highly rated, but it isn't the Harvard of China. But this year, after not being able to take that opportunity a year ago, mainly because of lingering health concerns on my part, I just didn't feel that sense of getting a green light, as we so often like to say, to go ahead and do it. And it involved, as it did this year, a period of 5 weeks, a week of orientation, and then the opportunity to actually teach a course. In this case, a course called Advanced English Public Speaking. From time to time, when I'm asked about that, some eyebrows are raised as though, well, why would you do that? You've been a professor of religious studies, New Testament, Christian social ethics, things of that sort. But it had been many years since I taught in any way in a university campus. This year it opened up, and as it turned out, you were able to go with me. And I, as you know, I said, I will not do this unless you can go and unless you can also participate in the teaching aspect of this course. That was a little bit tricky to negotiate for a while, but we were able to pull it off, obviously with the Lord's help and blessing. Cher, it was a fabulous, wonderful experience. I'm still having problems re-entering life here in beautiful Orange County, California, of all places. A lot of people regard this as paradise, but I'm still walking around, as I said, I think in a Facebook entry I made the other day, still walking around full of China love in my heart, in my mind, and it's difficult to get rid of it, and I hope I never do.
Mm-hmm.
But, Chair, you had the opportunity also to teach, and what you did was a very important aspect, because when you come right down to it, public speaking, in addition to all the so-called book learning and lecture stuff that needs to be done, you have a background, I think uniquely equipping you to do this. You have a background in performance, in the arts, in music, in theater work, and all of that over the years, and you were able to put this to good use. And what I'd like for you to do is just tell our listeners to begin with what the young people were like that enrolled in our course. 75 of them, it turned out, was a large enough number that we had to have two sections.
Mm-hmm.
So we taught two-hour sessions each day, 4 hours on our feet, and it was exhausting, but it was also so incredibly uplifting and exciting. Tell our listeners about these wonderful students, Chinese students at Peking University.
Well, we wondered the first day exactly what kind of an experience we were going to have, because they were so quiet, so unresponsive. I mean, they were attentive and taking notes like crazy and very much in the academic world, but they were very shy. And what we discovered was that they are never asked to speak in a class in China. Unless a professor calls on a specific student to demand an answer for something, they never speak in their classes. And here we were trying to begin the process by demonstrating to them what it meant to speak publicly, trying to be a good example of what we were going to be asking from them as they studied. And it was a very quiet classroom.
To begin with.
Yes. But it didn't take long at all for them to understand that we really wanted to get to know them, first of all. They were shocked that they had to wear name badges so that we could get to know each one of them individually. And we started out doing just some silly little warm-up exercises to get them speaking out loud, to get them moving a little bit, and to get them laughing, just to break the tension in the classroom and understand that we were there to have a really good time, because public speaking is a difficult thing to do, and unless you're having an enjoyable experience doing it, it's not going to come across to the audience.
You know, honey, I'd like to help our listeners to understand what a variety of backgrounds were represented in that class. To begin with, Peking University is a national university. In other words, it draws students from all over the country of China. They apply for admission, and huge numbers apply, in the thousands apply, for a very few openings each year. And these were undergraduate students who had come from the Southwest, from the South, from the Far West. In fact, we even had a couple of students who came from other universities, one from the University of Hong Kong, another one who came from Nanjing University, also a very fine school south of Beijing. But they also came not only from a variety of locations all across the country, but they came from a variety of academic backgrounds.
And ages.
Yeah. We had students, for example, that came from the School of Law, the law school there, which is, as you might imagine, very highly rated. In fact, one of them was pretty close to being our star pupil, I must say. She was fantastic. But we also had students from the School of Foreign Language. One young woman is studying the Burmese language, for example, and very much invested in the study of that country. Another one from the School of International Relations. Others from the School of Mathematics, from the sciences.
Computer
engineering.
Sciences, right? And robots.
Yeah, exactly. And one young man wanted to talk incessantly about quantum physics. And boy, was he out of my league when he hit that subject matter. But the point I'm trying to make here is that they came from this amazing variety geographically, as well as in terms of academic preparation. Also, I should mention the School of Business And as our listeners may know, China has become an extremely committed nation to capitalism. Interesting for a nation that historically, at least since 1949, has been a communist, a socialist country, where the government plans and runs everything. But back a number of years ago, they began to develop a philosophy that said one country, two systems. Mm-hmm. And that applied to Hong Kong with its rampant capitalism. But now capitalism has spread throughout China. And practically everything I'm wearing right now, by the way, was made in China as we're talking here. My point is that the School of Business has become filled with very high-powered, highly invested in success, young people who are highly motivated and who see themselves in the future, perhaps, standing up in front of a group of corporate executives in a board meeting, giving a speech about something of great import to the business of that particular corporation. So we had all of these sort of mixed sets of ambition all put together and wanting to learn how they could be effective in speaking. And it involved book learning, absolutely. They were reading several texts that we had assigned. But in the classroom, as time went on, it was more stand up and speak. Comment a little bit more about that. And then I want to come back to another issue, another question, which is this. Norman Scher, you are committed to the gospel of Jesus Christ. Why would you go and teach something other than, let's say, biblical studies or theology or missions? Why would you go to a secular university in China and teach something like public speaking, for which, in a sense, vocationally, both of us have been very well prepared? But on the other hand, seems, at least on the face of it, to have absolutely nothing to do with communicating the gospel of Jesus Christ. So I'd like to come back to that. But at the moment, talk just a little bit more about how you were able to get through to these sort of academically inclined young people and get them to speak up, speak out, to follow the various strictures involved in being a first-rate speaker in a public forum.
One of the issues that we faced was that I've done this kind of thing, teaching performance, for many, many years. And, of course, you get the performer up in front. You let them do a little bit, and then you critique gently, and you work with certain things that they said or did or whatever and try to show them another way to do it and then have them do it again. And you sort of mold them into what they're doing. But we knew that in China, we had to be cautious because losing face is a very important issue over there. And we weren't sure how far we could go with critiquing things without causing them to lose face.
Explain that for a moment. What does face involve? Just in case our listeners are not familiar with that very important aspect of life in China.
Well, it's how people perceive you. If someone were to come in front of other people and say, you're doing this wrong, not only would you be humiliated, but you would be humiliated in front of your friends or your family. And that is embarrassing and detrimental to everybody, that you would lose this respect that people must have for you to be a viable person. So, you know, we talk about saving face here, which is the same thing. We don't want to be embarrassed or humiliated or criticized in front of other people. So we knew that we had to be cautious, but we didn't know how cautious we had to be. So I just started group things, getting them to say things. We knew that there were certain syllables, certain words that were very difficult for them to say in English. And of course, most of them have been trained in British English, so we couldn't take that away from them. We had to leave the British in place.
They had a high level of proficiency, didn't they, in terms
most of
vocabulary
them.
And so forth.
We think they need to be screened a little bit better if they do that course again. But interestingly, the three youngest that we had that were just going into high school who got approved for this course were three of the better speakers that we had.
Brilliant.
But so just getting them to do things out loud with each other at the same time and have fun with that to get them laughing and trying things and then picking out people that were doing it well and getting them to be a little bit louder so the class could hear them. And we just had to make it an atmosphere of fun learning together so that we weren't putting anybody on the spot where they would freeze and be afraid of doing something wrong, but they could just open their mouths and speak.
They learned to do two kinds of speaking, essentially. Perhaps there was a third. One was called informative speaking, in which you give a speech in which you simply give information. You're not trying to persuade or motivate people to do anything or think in a particular way to change their outlook on life, anything like that. The second kind was persuasive speaking, in which that's exactly what you're trying to do. You're trying to get people to change their perception of the world around them, to change their behavior, to change maybe even their values. And this all led, honey, into what I wanted to talk about here with regard to why would we be excited about teaching public speaking. And what I would say is this, that eventually, in fact, almost inescapably, in a course like this, you end up talking about values. And it generates a kind of dialogue going back and forth, not only between, let's say, you or me and the class, but also within the class itself. And we began to talk about things that had some real bearing on the gospel, on the way we live our lives, on matters of commitment that we have, issues of ethics, behavior. All of those things generally are not discussed, let's say, in a course in English, where you're learning grammar or vocabulary, things like that, or let's say history or law, perhaps in law. But generally speaking, this course opened up a dialogue back and forth with these students on matters of values, and that led to some very interesting questions. For example, tell our listeners what one young man asked you one day in a break. Just ask you point blank.
I will, but let me back up just a little bit, honey. You're always using the phrase, preach the gospel constantly, and if necessary, use words.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Our prayer going over there, and I think we even discussed this on the air before we went, was for God to use every word, every action, every emotion, every heartbeat of ours to show himself through us. Secondly, the kids know that most of the American teachers that come to teach over there are Christians.
In fact, in the program that we were a part of. Yeah.
Well, and in other systems too. They assume that if you're from America, you're a Christian. So you're on the spot already being looked at as this is what a Christian is. But during a break, well, it started before that. We showed some interesting videos that were good speeches. And one of the things that we showed was President Nixon as he was leaving office in disgrace. And we talked about what happened in the country around all of that Watergate mess and how the country had not forgiven him. Whether if he had admitted it at the beginning and not lied about it, whether he could have been forgiven and could have stayed. Well, one of the girls came up right after class and she was really concerned about this forgiveness. How do you do that? What she just was consumed with. How can you forgive? Or are you supposed to forgive? And we got into a wonderful dialogue about Christ's forgiveness for us, saying this is what we believe and this is what we are asked to do as Christians. But not everyone believes the same way. So it's inherent on us who claim that we follow Jesus, that we forgive, not forgiving the act, but getting rid of the destruction that unforgiveness does in our hearts and lives. But during the break, every hour they got a 10-minute break, one of the guys leans up and in a very loud voice said, "Miss Scher, are you a Christian?" Well, there were about six or seven kids still seated there, and they all turned to see what the answer to that was. And I looked at him and I said, "Well, yes, Edgar, we are." But then I went on to say, just because we're Americans and say we're from a Christian nation is not what makes us Christian. I said, we believe, and we talk more in lines of we are believers, or we are disciples of Jesus, or
Christian is a cultural term.
Christ followers, and that the original meaning for Christians was the Christ ones.
Yeah.
And I said, we believe that we are Jesus followers and must do what he asks of us first. And I talked about feeding the poor and clothing the naked and, you know, all of the things that Jesus asks us to do. I said, so there is a difference between people who say they are Christians and the people who are Christ followers. In his school, he had had Christian teachers before and had had long discussions with them. He even knew about the Trinity and had questions about all of those things. And I was just amazed at the level of understanding. Now, when we have been there before and talked to college-age students, they've had these questions from their communist classes about things that they should not believe about the Christian faith. So they had all these words that they knew that they wanted to ask about, but they have no concept of what they meant. He and evidently various groups of students have had exposure to Christian teachers before, and they really know what it's all about.
Those are examples of the kinds of things that happened repeatedly during the opportunity that we were given on the last day of class, when a young man came up to me and asked me basically what it meant to follow Jesus. And we had a long talk, and I was able to talk with him about what it meant to follow Jesus, what it meant that Jesus is still alive, he is risen from the dead, and so forth. And this young man wanted to know more about how he could follow up and learn more about this. And there is, of course, a wonderful Christian church not too far away from the university campus, and I tried to direct him in that direction. But the point I'd like to make here is that this turned out to be a tremendous spiritual experience for you and for me, not just an academic or even a performance sort of thing, but an opportunity to share the gospel of Christ. And in some way, I'm delighted, and I'm sure this is the result of prayers that accompanied us. The young people somehow saw in us something that they wanted to know more about, and opened a door in their hearts and minds to discussion about Jesus and discipleship and what that might mean in their lives. I want to thank those who are listening right now who prayed for
us
as we were there. Those prayers, it was palpable, the impact that it had on us. You were ill much of the time, and yet you were feisty enough and committed enough to get up every day, even when you weren't feeling well, and go to class. And as I said on one Facebook entry, you were a star in front of those young people. It was an absolute marvel of an experience. And those of you who are excited about China and what God is doing there, I just want to say this. Continue to pray for China.
Yes.
Continue to pray for Compassion Radio, because as a result of this experience, our commitment to China has been extended and empowered and made even greater than it has been in the past. We're not sure where that's going to lead us, but I can tell you this, that China is at the forefront of almost everything that we're going to be doing in the future. But I want to thank our listeners for praying, for giving, for standing with us, and for making this experience in China, for you and for me, one of the highlights of our life together in service to Jesus Christ. Not only through Compassion Radio, but just as Norm and Scher, followers of Jesus. It was a great experience.
Today's Compassion Radio program originally aired in August of 2014. It's from our vast program archives. For as little as $6. You can place a copy of the Bible into the hands of a Chinese believer who's desperate for his or her own copy. $60 provides 10 Bibles, $90 provides 15 Bibles, and so on. Call today, 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. Reach us by mail at Compassion Radio, Post Office Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. That's Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And of course, our website can be found precisely where you think it is, CompassionRadio.com. That toll-free phone number once more, 1-800-868-2478. I'm Jim Governale. On behalf of Norman Cher Nelson and the entire team, thanks for tuning in and have a wonderful day in the Lord. And we'll see you again tomorrow on the next Compassion Radio.